All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, November 15th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. You can head over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NBA, NFL, MLB during the time, we cover it all under one subscription package. So go over, check it out. Free for 3 days and then $39.95 a month after that. And you're all set to go. Buddy, sitting in the room with you, doing a live podcast here, sitting up in your office as opposed to just talking over the internet. Does it feel better for you to see me face to face when we're talking basketball, or does it really not matter for you?
Yes, it feels much better.
I can tell.
Much better.
I can tell by how calm you are and how cool and collected you are and not staring.
My body just feels relaxed. I can't just read Facebook and ignore you, unfortunately, but other than that, I'm feeling okay.
I know, yeah, your typical drill during the podcast is to just kind of wait to hear the cadence of my voice slowly come to an end and then click off whatever social media thing you're posting on.
And then chime in with whatever I'm going to say. Yeah, and your normal thing, if I need you to not forget to do a sponsor, I can just write it down instead of having to send you a GChat message. So I think all in all, it's going to be a more streamlined product today.
It's already going really well. All right, we're going to talk a pretty full slate of basketball games here. I didn't even bother counting how many there were, but 7:30 start time, so a half hour later than usual. So that's two nights in a row where you get... usually, I'm pretty usually locked into 7 o'clock is when things go off.
Tell your kids, tell your wife.
Right, exactly. So make an excuse to get away half hour later than usual tonight. All right, let's get through. There's some injury news, not a ton for a huge slate, all things considered. I think we have a lot of the information we have, though. That being said, it's basketball and things always do change leading up to lock. So I'm sure there'll be things that come out over the course of the day. As it stands right now, as we go game through game, I'll make mention of a couple things. There's probably one piece that I would say is really relevant right now, and the rest of it is going to be kind of wait and see. The first game is Washington and Miami. Miami's a -1 favorite at home here. Not a lot to say here, I don't think, about this game. Miami still plays pretty slow. They have been playing a slightly shorter rotations in the short term with guys like Dragic and Richardson getting some more minutes. Winslow's been starting, although he hasn't been playing a ton. Anything you really like from this game? It does seem like it's going to be... the total's not crazy low. I guess Miami's not as slow as I thought. They're 17th in pace. Anything you like from this game?
Not especially. I think if you're looking for separation, this is a good game to turn to because nobody's going to be on this game today. The total's not super high. Like to your point, Miami plays slow, plays pretty good defense. Washington actually does play pretty fast, but they're also somewhat effective on the defensive side of the ball. And really, I think the bigger thing is the Heat, who would be the team we would normally be looking at four plays, like we don't normally play people against the Heat. They just don't really have a lot of high upside guys. And so no one really crosses the threshold for cash, like a Dragic, probably not Richardson either. And nobody really crosses it for upside either. So it's just kind of like winds up being sort of a no man's land. I think you can consider Josh Richardson. He's been touching mid-30s minutes. He's just 4,900 on FanDuel. Last game he played 35 minutes and scored 33 fantasy points. And that's solid. That's really good production. It's just a question of whether you think he can sustain it. And again, for cash, I think there's just better value out there.
Yeah, the Heat strike me as one of those teams where, you could say this about a lot of teams. They strike me as a team that I really consider when one of their guys is out, right? If a Richardson's out or a James, if James Johnson can slide into the starting lineup, that's really kind of where I end up focusing on the Heat. But on big slates, right? They just don't have a ton of guys to do a lot of stuff. Utah goes in to play New York, the Knicks. Really, well, it's so funny to say, they hung with the Cavs the other night, but everyone kind of hangs with the Cavs now.
Well, they didn't hang with them. They were destroying them by 20 points, and then they completely blew it. So it wasn't like they were like trading blows. No, they just took a nap in the fourth quarter after completely... and it looked terrible at the end of the third quarter. We were watching that game, and it just looked like they were abusing the Cavs, totally having their way. The Cavs were getting terrible possession after terrible possession, and then, unfortunately, those started turning into made baskets in the fourth quarter, and they gave it all back.
The Jazz are still without Rudy Gobert. He's going to miss a few weeks here. We saw that Favors played and started and played the five a ton in the first game out, and then really only kind of played like 30 minutes the next game. Favors, I thought, he was pretty chalky, so I'm like not begrudging the decision here, but he was just the right kind of guy. Like, for a long time, the Jazz have been trying to have Favors and Gobert coexist on the court together. It doesn't really totally work. But then you get Favors out, and you're like, oh, great, we're going to move him up to the small ball five, and he's going to play a lot. And then he kind of only plays 30 minutes. The minutes went down, and the price went up. Do you think you can still consider Favors here? Like, do you think Which one do you think is the real thing they want to do? Do you think they want like the 37 or so minutes that they had for the first game, or the 30 minutes that they got from him last game?
Well, this I think is a case where you just make a decision on, like, you consider it a binary. You consider that he'll probably play either 26 minutes or 35 minutes. I think this is an interesting game to consider that, because on one hand, he has a great offensive matchup. You know, normally the issue with having Favors and Gobert on the court at the same time is that neither really stretch the floor very much, and you can only have, in the modern NBA, you can only have so many guys standing right next to the basket. In this game, going up against Kanter down low is a great spot for Favors if he winds up playing the five. And even Porzingis, you know, Porzingis is a pretty effective defender in a lot of ways, but Favors, I think, slightly athleticisms him and should be able to get to the hoop if he's down there. That being said, I think, yeah, you want to take it as a binary. You don't want to split the difference and assume he'll play 31 minutes. I think you either figure things are going great and the Jazz leave him out there, or they just go back to what they did last game and play him 26 minutes. So that to me sounds like a big tournament play. I think, you know, depending on how the pieces all come together, I might be willing to roll with it, but I'm going to be doing so with the understanding that I'm taking on a decent amount of risk.
Yeah, to play 27 minutes, and again, you're facing guys like Towns and Gibson in the last game. This is exactly the spot we would have thought he would be able to stay on the court, and he just wasn't able to. And I just think they don't trust him being able to do it. So I was getting real didactic tone in the chat room the other day with people not wanting to play Favors, because I was like, this is kind of DFS 101. This is exactly the guy you play, right? Like, there's been a clear context for why he's getting more minutes, and then the Jazz just kind of S all over my point there and just playing 27 minutes. Knicks side of the ball, I mean, Jazz still play very, you know, it doesn't matter their personnel, even with some of the personnel change they have, they're still playing a very slow pace, pretty good on defense. Is there reasons to consider guys like Porzingis? I mean, Hardaway played a ton of minutes in that Cleveland game. Kander still is kind of playing minutes in the 30s. Anything, even though it's Utah, anything you like in the New York side?
Nope, I'm going to take a breath on the Knicks and come back to them next game. I think on a big slate like this, again, we just don't have to kiss frogs like this and play guys against Utah, or the next game we'll get to Sacramento. You know, these teams that are playing super, super slow, they just chew up too many possessions for me to really feel comfortable for cash games, because it doesn't take much. In any given NBA game, we see this all the time. Things go wrong. Guy loses 3 minutes here, gets in foul trouble, misses 2 minutes in the first quarter, whatever's going to happen. But basically, this is like everyone starts the game with foul trouble. So it's not like it's impossible to pay your price. It's just there's this additional hurdle that, in my opinion, just makes it sort of not worth it. And I don't, for that reason, I'm just going to kind of cruise right past the Knicks and move on to the next game.
They who shall not be named are playing the Hawks in the other 7:30 game.
The Kangs?
I'm not saying their name. I refuse to think about them or talk about
them. You wouldn't
even
update them in the system last night. You just ignored them completely, and we were having Bogdan and Justin Jackson, all those guys showing up in the
system. 22 minutes. It's not like I put them at 30 minutes. They had those guys losers at 22 minutes. You really can't trust this team. Their rotations, they're just the wrong kind of team to try to make guesses on. So I'm ignoring the Kings.
So I'm going to jump in here, and I think Justin Jackson actually provides some level of intrigue. So in the last four games, 30, 29, 25, and 26 minutes, very bad in the last two games against the Knicks and Washington. Basically needed to take 51 minutes combined in those games in order to pay his, you know, pretty affordable $3,000 salary. The prior two games, though, 6 and 7x against Philly and OKC, neither of which is a particularly good matchup for him. And I think he's worth keeping on your radar, particularly for big tournaments. I don't think you want to just ignore him. I think that the Kings are making a decision between him and Bogdan Bogdanovic, and I think that they'll probably wind up on Jackson just because of the upside, and he's just a more exciting player. But, you know, don't ignore them completely, I guess, is my counsel to you, dear listener.
Ignore them completely. So the other news here is the Hawks are going to get Ersan Ilyasova back. Not a huge deal in the sense I don't think we want to play Ilyasova, but some of the minutes we've been seeing out of the bigs on the Hawks side, guys like, well, Muscala's been out, but guys like John Collins, Deadman to some degree, Luke Babbitt, these guys had seen minutes upticks on with Ilyasova out. I think Ilyasova comes back in, starts playing low 20s minutes, and you can probably ignore the rest of the team now.
Yeah, he's like the worst kind of guy to come back, actually, because he just comes in and chews up the minutes of the interesting plays.
And it would be interesting. He would in himself be interesting if he actually played, but they don't want to do that. They're fine to just start him and run him out something like 22 minutes a game, and that's kind of just their plan. The really big news, the next game, and this is probably the news we're going to wait on the most, is the Chicago goes, there's actually a couple injury pieces here. Chicago goes in to play OKC. There's no line in the game right now because Carmelo Anthony is questionable. He sat out last game, and I think that the reason this matters is because without Melo there, I think we can pretty safely give usage bumps to guys like Paul, specifically George and Westbrook. I think Westbrook in and of itself is a good play anyway, but you know, what do we, if Melo were to sit again, do you see like just kind of stacking the Westbrook George pieces together, knowing that that's going to be most of the shots? I mean, those guys were huge usage guys when Melo sat last game. Do you think that would be in the game for in the cards for cash games this week?
Yeah, I think tonight? I think George would be a phenomenal play. I mean, it's weird because again, we roll right into yet another really slow team. Chicago right there with Sacramento. Their pace is 98. Sacramento's is 97.8. So this would be a pretty bad spot, just in terms of pace. But we saw with George, I mean, he went off completely on this price, like GPP winning sort of going off against Dallas, who also plays really slow and in a lot of ways cuts a very similar profile to Chicago. They play a bottom five pace in the league, but they play some of the worst defense. Chicago, not quite as bad on defense, at 106.1 defensive efficiency versus Dallas's 108.7, but still pretty lousy. And so it's not quite as good a matchup in both of those respects, but I think it's still solid. And you can even, again, shave 10 points off of Paul George's production and still get there. I think Westbrook, I still like him too on these prices. And, you know, with Melo gone, it seems to free these guys up a little bit. But George is the guy I really, really liked.
I would feel fine with both of them. I still think Westbrook's price is fine, all things being equal. Like, I don't have any queries. And the NBA WOW is really good for this on-court, off-court data. But the clear usage guys, when Melo is off the court this year, the sample size is probably a little too small for us to make any great judgments. But this, it's actually... It's sort of also like a known quantity that what this team is probably going to do. Westbrook sees a huge usage jump if Melo's not there. Paul George also sees it because Melo is the second highest usage guy on the team so far this season. Again, the season's still very new and we're still learning a lot about the team, but I think that this is probably what they're going to be their plan. I think we're going to wait on this news. And I think, like I said, I'm comfortable at 10-3. I think I'm comfortable with Westbrook no matter what, even in the slower matchup. And then George probably instantly shoots up and just stack him together knowing that you're going to get most of the Thunder points. The other piece of news here from this game, and it's probably a little bit more relevant on DraftKings, is Justin Holiday is he's out on paternity leave, and Chris Dunn is going to come in and start. They're getting very thin in the backcourt right now. It's going to be Jerry and Grant and Chris Dunn. Dunn is a guy, you know, he's kind of expensive on DraftKings, like, or excuse me, on FanDuel, where he's over 6,000. On DraftKings, though, he's under 5. Do you like him for, like, a lot of minutes here, knowing that they're already without Valentine, now they're going to be without Holiday, who actually was, like, one of their major minutes guys out of the backcourt? Do you like, I mean, I said Dunn at 35 minutes, that might be low.
Yeah, Dunn's a lock on DraftKings, for sure. I think he's worth considering on FanDuel, too. I mean, Oklahoma City's playing great defense this year, but it's sort of a pace-up matchup for the Bulls, pretty considerably, so yeah, I think Dunn is a great play on both sides.
Moving on, actually, well, anyone else here? I mean, do you like the guys like Jerry and Grant maybe going to play a lot of minutes here? The backcourt's very thin. It was a little hard to figure out It was actually just a little hard to figure out their minutes in general. Another guy like Bobby Portis has been great since he's been back, still coming off the bench. Anything else you like on the Bulls?
Not especially. I mean, I think there's still too much uncertainty as to where the minutes will go in some spots. Portis, I think, is worth considering, but again, he's kind of getting expensive based on the minutes that have been there. So, you know, if you can trust him for 1.2 fantasy points per minute or whatever he's been producing, then maybe you get there. But, you know, he played 4 extra minutes against San Antonio and didn't pay this price, went up to 29 minutes. And I think that the production, I mean, he wasn't just going to put up 20 and 10 in 24 minutes for the rest of the season. Like, he's just not that quality of player. He certainly came back with a vengeance, but didn't really sustain that level of energy against the Spurs. So, nah, I'm not really in on... I think Chris Dunn is a great play. I think everyone else... Again, Oklahoma City, underratedly bad matchup. One of the top 2 defensive efficiencies in the NBA this season. So, yeah, I'm just not going to go there.
My guess is that, you know, there's probably not enough of a sample on this, but my guess is that Oklahoma City's pace upticks without Melo would be my guess. I suspect they play fat. The more minutes you get Westbrook on the court without Melo, my guess is they're a pace up, though. It's probably not to a huge, huge degree. Another 8 o'clock game, Detroit goes in to play Milwaukee. Detroit's been pretty good this year. I read an interesting thing about Tobias Harris, that Tobias Harris, he's having a great season, and he got LASIK surgery in the offseason. So, like, he's using that to claim that, like, why his shooting's better. There's been a marked shift in, like, how good he's been this season as opposed to other seasons. So I think that, you know, there could be something. There was an article, the article had other examples of guys who had gone through LASIK surgery that had shown pretty, I think Chris Paul was one of them, like other guys that had just clearly ticked up their shooting. He's shooting over 50% from three-pointer. That is not likely to stand, though.
It's like basketball's so easy now.
It's like, oh my God, look, I can see, dude. I mean, he's taking less three-pointers. So, it stands to reason.
Yeah, shot selection.
Yeah, like he's just getting better shots. Detroit's one of these teams that has had pretty steady minutes rotations so far this season, even with even guys like Drummond are seeing it. What do you like on the Detroit side here? And is there anything with this kind of new look Bucks team?
Well, I'll start with the new look Bucks because I think they're kind of a quicker talk. I think Bledsoe comes in and kind of just messes everything up for them. Middleton has taken a nosedive. Bledsoe himself isn't really paying his prices. Both combination of the minutes and the production aren't really there. I think Giannis is still, you know, he's worth considering at 12,000. I mean, I'm not sure in a big slate it's where I'm going to go, but on big slates, you know, opportunity tends to open up in the really low price tiers, and he's got to be a guy that's on your radar. I think John Henson's just too expensive. Like, he'll pay it and then some nights, and then score 16 fantasy points the other nights. And then, you know, there's no one that qualifies at center who you can consider for fantasy purposes. So it's really, for me, it's Giannis and then everyone else in a big gap.
The good news on Giannis is they're completely still willing to play him huge minutes.
Sure, seems like it.
40 or more minutes, three of the last four games. And obviously, the two games with Bledsoe, he's played 40 or more minutes. So the minutes are there. Now, again, the minutes have been there, but the fantasy production is great, but not for 12,000, right? So, like,
It's okay for 12,000.
Right. It's not, you're not getting completely dusted on it, but it's not. For a guy running out there for 40 minutes, you would probably expect probably a little bit higher. And it was one good matchup, one bad matchup. It's a little too early to tell on what the overall fantasy gains or losses are going to be for Giannis. The most encouraging thing is the minutes are there. What about Detroit? I mean, again, like I mentioned before, they're playing pretty solid rotations. They've been a decent team. They all kind of seem fairly priced at this point. I'm just wondering if you see anything. I love the system loves Drummond. Let's talk about Drummond right now. Drummond is 9,400. If you run lineups on our site, he's in 100% of lineups at the center position, even at 9,400. Is that something you feel comfortable with? Has he been good enough for you? Are the minutes there enough? That's kind of the thing I've always worried about Drummond in the past. It feels like, though, he seems pretty... He's getting to the safe point. I'm not sure. What do you think on Drummond?
Yeah, Drummond, well, he's always had this two-way minutes risk, right? The first way is that he can get in foul trouble, and that's obviously just dusts off his minutes because he leaves the game. The other way is he can lose minutes in the fourth quarters if the other team plays foul Andre and get to watch him shoot terrible free throws. Again, his free throws are better this season, and that seems to be happening a lot less. The thing I really like about Drummond is, well, in this matchup particularly, he just brings an absurdly high floor at the table. In the last four games, his lowest rebound total is 17. So when you start the game basically with 17 rebounds or 15 rebounds, maybe in his case, then you really don't have to do a whole lot of else to make it all work. I love that he's been passing better this season. Four assists is his minimum in his last four games too. So he really seems to be active in all phases of the game. I guess I don't mind Drummond. I also kind of like that the Bucks aren't starting an actual credible center. That really helps someone like Drummond too, whose athleticism and size gives even the real true big strong centers difficulty. So I can get behind Drummond here.
Yeah, Zach Lowe wrote a piece about Drummond the other day and just saying that he, studying the film on him, the defense had also greatly improved. Like, he was much more engaged on defense. He was understanding switches better. Again, like, I'm not totally trained to see that kind of thing, but when guys like Zach Lowe break it down, it is something I kind of buy into. And, you know, you mentioned before with the free throw shooting, that the very way to keep yourself on the court here for him has been the free throw shoot. He's basically doubled his free throw. Now, it's 75% better. Like, something like that.
That's hard to do.
It's unbelievable. And it looks sustainable. Like he did the stuff in the offseason and just changed his form and changed the way he was, like, approaching. You know, there was a thing about how he was the way he was approaching free throws, that he was getting himself into a pattern each time. Like, you know, good free throw shooters, you see them do the same exact things every time, and he basically just established a pattern for himself to be able to just kind of go up there without thinking and shoot. It seems to be paying dividends. And for him, if he's going to be able to play 35, 36 minutes, I think he is sustainable at 9,400. Hit us up with the sponsor. We'll keep rolling through some of these games.
Yeah, we'll talk about FantasyFactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go and play salary cap DFS format games without going up against a ton of big sharks. You know, really perfect for people looking to play between, say, $5 and $100 per night. One thing the Fantasy Factor does really well, if you are looking to get started there, is they run free rolls all the time. They run NBA free rolls, especially on big nights like tonight. They also run NFL free rolls every weekend. So go check out FantasyFactor.com. You can also probably get a lot of overlay by going and checking them out too. So yeah, one of our longest time sponsors at this point. So I think they'll be around, and I think they're legit. Check them out.
Cleveland goes in and plays Charlotte. The news and injuries on the Charlotte side is, it looks like Nick Batum is going to be back tonight and he's going to play limited minutes. I think that's sort of the same thing. The Batum, at least right now, is the same kind of thing as Ilyasova, in that you can't play Batum, and now you can't play any of the other Charlotte guys either. Like, I don't think, because you're going to lose minutes on clearly on Jeremy Lamb. you're probably going to lose minutes on some of those guys that play like those hybrid threes, like the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist of the world. And that, I think that just, the Batum coming back is a cascading effect all the way down the lineup for everyone, probably except for Kemba Walker, would be my guess. Like anyone that basically plays like the two through the four, because they just can rotate all these other guys, like these kind of like long guys that they have in their lineup. So that's the news there. Wondering your thoughts on Cleveland. I said to you yesterday that Cleveland is starting to enter the, like, is starting to enter the Phoenix Suns, Sacramento Kings, Brooklyn Nets, like, category of they don't have a plan, and therefore we cannot have a plan when we're trying to set them outside of LeBron. With LeBron, you have LeBron, I think you can lock him in for basically 40 to 41 minutes right now, pretty safely. After that, is there anything that can you can trust on the Cavs side? I mean, they started Crowder and Love. They played like a combined 43 minutes the other night or something like that. 45 minutes. These are their two starters because they just went hot hand with guys like Channing Frye. Well, and
that wasn't the plan going in, the hot hand. It was because they were down by 20 points, again, to the Knicks. And so if they're going to be in situations like that, they're obviously not a very appealing team. I think Love is still tolerable. I mean, he's 7,200. I have to think the plan in any given game is to leave him out there for 34 minutes. I think this is another game where he's a candidate to lose minutes. Like, he's the absolute best possible matchup for a guy like Dwight if they're trying to bang bodies down low. A lot of the ways that Love has improved his defense, you know, being smarter, you know, rotating better, that sort of thing, kind of gets mitigated when you just get someone who's twice as athletic as you. So I think that's a pretty significant problem for Love here. I think he is a candidate to lose minutes in this game. And again, you don't need to lose. I think when people picture losing minutes, they picture losing like 10 minutes. You don't need to. If you lose 3 minutes, that's a huge disaster. That's, you know, conceivably 10% of your production. So, yeah, I don't know that I can sign off on playing any of these Cleveland guys, unfortunately, particularly in a not-so-great matchup with Charlotte.
Yeah, I think LeBron is still getting closer just because the minute they need him to play so much. The team is so bad. They 40 minutes is like kind of what they need him to do on a night-to-night basis if they want to stay in games. I think 11-3 for him is probably close to fair. I don't know if that's going to be the place that I go. I love it 33 minutes, and that seems wildly optimistic. Like, I think he's
nah, fine. That seems right.
The thing is, he just never lands there. Like, he never lands at 33 minutes. Like, he lands at like more or less. Like, 33 is not, it doesn't seem like the number that they want to play. Again, they don't have a plan. Like, they just kind of, they go out there. Ty Lue is just kind of playing guys. Whoever can make the shots that night is the guy who's going to play the whole game. We've seen it with Jeff Green. We saw Channing Frye the other night. Kyle Korver. Yeah, the list goes on. Like, anyway, so that's kind of my overall frustrating thoughts with Cleveland. Toronto goes in to play the Pelicans. It seemed like almost impossible for two guys
to have two $12,000 players.
That's what I was going to say. For a single team to sustain two guys of more than $11,000, almost $12,000 fantasy production, and they just keep doing it. It's been the thing that I've always been worried about playing Boogie and Davis since the start of the season, is that in my head, they're always taking away from the other person, but that's not reality. Like, that's not what's happening. Like, these guys are just out there every single night. They're taking all the shots. They're the entire team in terms of fantasy production. Do you think this is still sustainable? Do you think it's kind of been running hot? Like, I also kind of feel like, talk to me about this, because I also sometimes feel like I don't want to play him because I'm not playing the other guy, right? Like, so, like, you'll see Davis come into the lineup and I'll be like, but what if this is Boogie's night? But that's just made up in my head. Like, I'm not,
that's
like,
made up in your
exactly.
Head.
Like, and I think that, so anyway, do you think that, one, this is sustainable for them to keep rolling out this kind of production? And do you think we're in a pick your poison? Well, no, because they're big good. So what? Pick your good thing, not poison.
pick your candy. New saying.
Or do you think we just look at these guys as independent entities and just say whatever the price is right, or whatever like the matchup is right, this is the guy we want to play on this night?
Yeah, well, okay, so I think they're both two different players, and they happen to be on the same team, but I think their situations are actually somewhat different. I'm a lot more interested in playing Boogie this season than Davis, even though Boogie's a little bit more expensive, just because Boogie's basically the same player as he was last year, right? So Boogie this season, averaging 20.3 shots a game, same exact precise number that he averaged last year in Sacramento, actually. So he's added shots from when he played in New Orleans. He's also added a ton of minutes. He's playing the most minutes of any stop at any point in his career. The threes, he's still been making them, but he's shooting 7.6 threes per game. Like, that's so crazy. I can't believe it. So he's like not only the biggest inside threat, and he's the biggest outside threat. The rebounds have come up in lockstep too. Davis, meanwhile, he's playing more minutes, but he's doing everything that he did last year on a slightly lower rate stat, except for making more shots. And I actually get concerned when a guy jumps from 50% field goal percentage up to 56% field goal percentage, because people tend, I mean, now, he granted, if he's shooting fewer shots, and he cut the four worst shots he takes every game, then maybe he's going to make more of them. But I do, that it tends to not work that way, I guess, is my major point. So I am a little bit more concerned about Davis than I am about Cousins. I do think both of them wind up being playable at their price points on any given night, and it sort of comes down to matchup. But yeah, I wouldn't try to jam both of them. I don't think that's necessarily sound reasoning. And I don't really love either of them either. I don't think that they're phenomenal plays. I think they're matchup dependent, solid fill-ins at the big money spot, understanding that you can only play one player a night at 12,000.
Yeah, Toronto doesn't really have the defensive bodies to be able to hang with. And most teams don't. So don't get me wrong. Like, most teams don't have two bigs that can kind of run with these guys the entire game. It's just they're right. going to be constant mismatches. The rest of the Pelicans team is so bad is the reason that they just can't seem to get a lot of separation. And they ultimately just might not be the right kind of thing in the NBA. To be able to win long-term with these like two kind of guys. Now, that being said, there's still the fantasy production is crazy through the roof. Right now, if you run lineups on DraftKings, they're actually coming both into the lineups, but it's not like 100% kind of thing. On the Toronto side, anything here, they start OG Anunoby. I know I keep wanting to say Anunoby, but that's
I think
not
it's
right.
Og.
Oh, is it Og? OG. Yeah. They started him. He's still coming mid-price. He played a lot of minutes the other night. Last night. They're coming on the back-to-back. We're still kind of might be waiting on some injury news here. Anything you like on the Toronto side?
Yeah.
He started for Norman Powell, and Powell's questionable. So that's just the note there. Anything you like on Toronto?
Yeah, I think if Powell sits, I can roll OG on a new boy again.
It's not an on a new boy. It's on an Obi.
I can play Og Anunoby tonight. I think he makes a pretty good play. That's my buddy right there, too. I'm just giving him a hard time. If you're listening to OG, I got you, buddy. No sweat. The other guys, I think, are kind of weird. I mean, it's been like we oftentimes look at situations and we're like, well, what's changed in trying to figure out how to project players going forward? I'm curious to know what you think about Lowry, because really nothing has changed about this Raptors team except Lowry's down at 7,300 and like sort of just not even paying the price on most nights. I mean, he's been better recently in the last few games, but on balance this season, 30.2 fantasy points a game on a $7,300 salary, I would often be thinking about him in a game like this against the Pelicans, but I kind of just don't care anymore.
The shots are down, the minutes are down, and the shooting percentage is down.
Doesn't sound good. Is any of that good?
No. I tend to think the shooting is going to round itself back into shape, mostly because that's just what happens with NBA players, right? Like, NBA players typically just regress to their career mean. He's a 36%.
Yeah, you've shot a million shots. The next 300, you probably didn't change too much.
Right? We could also make the case that last year he ran hot, though, for a season, because he did. Last year was... He shot way beyond any of his career numbers. Like, so last year he shot 46% for the field. He's really 42%. He was at 42% on lock for his entire career. Like, now the 41% that he's shooting now is actually more in line with what he actually is. So the other way to look at it is what we were getting from Lowry last season was an outlier season for him. And if that's the case, like, what he's doing now is much more in line with what he's done for his whole career. So maybe we're not going to get that. Maybe that Kyle Lowry from last year is not going to walk back through the door. The fact that the minutes are down too, that's actually the most concerning thing to me. They have a guy in Dylan Wright that they are fine bringing in to run back up point guard duties. They have a couple of these guys that are sitting there. I think that they're, you know, the 37 minutes that we saw out of him pretty much like going crazy over the last two seasons doesn't seem like he's coming back because they're a little bit of a deeper team. I think that's my bigger concern. Maybe it's a two-problem concern. Last year might have been a little lucky, and maybe the minutes aren't coming back. So those are kind of my thoughts. Those are my thoughts on Lowry. And we are going to wait to see on some of this injury stuff. It's an 8 o'clock game. Hopefully we'll have it in time. The Raptors are notoriously bad for injury reporting, so you can never be completely sure. This game does have the highest total of the night and is supposed to be close, so you're going to probably want some exposure here, and it's nice that you get pretty consolidated exposure on the Pelican side. Pacers go in and play Memphis. Pacers are finally fully healthy with Turner back and Sabonis playing off the bench now. Memphis, they've been doing the minutes rigmarole, especially if they've been playing a lot of guys off the bench, though they're getting a little healthy. Anything you like in this game?
Well, yeah, right now Tyreke Evans is showing up in the optimal lineups. I know that there's kind of a lot of bodies, a lot of mouths to feed in the backcourt right now. Are you trusting that? 6,800 for him? Do you want to see his name in that final lineup?
I think not at 6,800. Although, I don't know. Anytime a bench guy at 6,800 is just almost too dicey. Like, I get that he's been pretty much paying this price, and the minutes have been there. Now, they've had some weird injury stuff where they've been able to play him more. He's, like, just the right kind of guy that they need to be able to bring in a scorer off the bench. And especially for a slow team like this, it's great to have a guy that can just have, like, a pretty high usage off the bench.
Right, just come in and shoot all the shots. He's been great in that role throughout his career.
Agreed. And so that's the part where you trust it. And I just think when you come off the bench, we've said this a million times, you are the number one candidate to not hit your minutes on a given night. There's too many things that can go wrong for you. If you're 33, let's say 33 minutes is like your max minutes. If you're a starter and you play around 33 minutes a game, there are times when you're just going to see 36 because you come back in a rotation too soon, or the game's close and they're just incentivized to get you back in. Even if that's the case with Evans, he just misses the first 6 minutes of the game. So you can just take off the first, like, he's never going to get those 6 minutes back.
That's a great point.
And so you're never going to reach the full, like, he'll never even hit the 40 minute mark in any given game because he sits out too much to start the game. So that's my big concern. And when we see this with guys too, like the Will Bartons of the world, like Lou Williams, these guys, well, not Lou Williams when he's coming off the bench, not when he's starting. We just see that, like, they run really good for the short term. We start trusting the production, and then one of those two things goes, and now all of a sudden you're complete dust at your price. So that's my kind of take on Evans. I always trend a little bit lower than his minutes overall.
What you said makes 100% sense. We had him at 32 minutes. That feels like just a tick too high. Probably 31 is the right number. And I loved your point about when you only start with 42 minutes left in the game, it's really hard for you to get the hot hand, or someone else to get injured, and you to get extra minutes. Like, look at what happened with Tim Hardaway against Cleveland. He happened to be running hot from the field, winds up getting 44 minutes, even if his true expectation is like 35 minutes. That can simply never happen with bench players. And I think, you know, and that's oftentimes where we tap into a lot of that upside. If you look at Tim Hardaway's season and he averages 29 fantasy points a game, that includes games like where he just goes out there and busts off 54 points because he adds 9 extra minutes when he's running really hot. So I think that's a great take. I think Evans, still worth considering. I don't think you want to write him off completely. If you ignore guys like him, you probably do cost yourself equity in the long run. It's just that if your general rule is to just ignore all bench players, you're still doing okay, even if you miss the occasional time where it's correct to play them.
Last 9 o'clock game here, or less, excuse me, last 8 o'clock Eastern game, San Antonio goes into play Minnesota. Minnesota is -5 favorites going in here. San Antonio, they've been starting Patty Mills. He's been playing 32 minutes, right around 30 minutes as they kind of are off the Deontay Murray train where he was starting. Anything you like here, Aldridge, they're coming on the back-to-back, so I guess the Spurs are always candidates to rest somebody here because they played last night. Aldridge's been playing a lot of minutes. I mean, do you like this matchup for them going against Minnesota or anything you like going the other way?
I really like Patty Mills. I mean, I think, you know, just 4,500, we've seen him pay these prices many, many times in the past with a very similar lineup construction. Kind of checks the box when you think about guys who sometimes the system wants to consider off the bench. And when now that he's in the starting role and they're realizing that he's just a more skilled player than Devontae Murray, at least for fantasy purposes, I actually do like Mills quite a bit. I think he's got something like that 17, 18 point floor, which just isn't a disaster when that comes in. And I think the upside is like what we saw against Dallas. You know, when he's clicking on the defensive end, can top 40 fantasy points. So I think he's a very, very reasonable cash game inclusion here, and wouldn't be sad at all to see him in really a lineup of any form.
He's never going to be a high assist guy, so you need him to score. He's got
6 assists 2 games ago. Like, that's not on 4,500. That's pretty reasonable.
Oh, yeah, no, I think he's a good play. I think he's, I think if you have the 30 minutes are going to be there, and they seem pretty, it's a reasonable assessment. I think that 30 minutes is going to be right around where you're going to see him. I like him. Kyle Anderson's been playing a lot of minutes. He can do a lot of nothing.
Comes and goes.
He's still coming pretty cheap, but he played a decent amount of minutes, still starting for Kawhi.
He's been great in the last 3 games.
Yeah, Anderson. And he actually, the thing with Anderson is he kind of will contribute in other areas too. Like, he'll contribute on the defensive part, which actually helps raise his floor a little bit because he's not going to see a lot of shots.
Same on the glass though, too. Snatching bad boards, yeah.
Yeah, so those are the Aldridge, Anderson, and Mills group is really the only thing I really trust from the Spurs team. And Minnesota, you just get a bad, pretty slow matchup on a big slate against Spurs.
And a good defensive team.
Yeah.
I want to point out for Butler going forward, just because this was a conversation in the chat room the other night, and I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too much, but people were concerned about playing him against Phoenix. There was a lot going on, a lot of intense weirdness going on with this Minnesota team for that 4-game stretch between the game against Miami on the 30th and then the game against Phoenix on the 11th. The last 2 games are the games you want to focus in on with Minnesota when projecting them going forward. Even if this game, if they get blown out, which they very well could, I think you want to take a look at Butler's last 2 games. He's still a great value on these prices overall, and so I don't think you should walk away from him If he just has another bad game here, I actually don't think Butler is going to be an inconsistent performer as the season goes along.
No, I think we've seen that the Tibbs wants to play his guys' minutes. That the group is all playing. I mean, Taj is still playing a ton of minutes. I think you can consider him too. He's still coming.
Like me some Taj.
Pretty cheap, even though the matchup isn't all that great. So his price has ticked up a little bit, but not to the point where we need to totally ignore him. Only 4,800. Having to roster the two power forwards on FanDuel makes a guy like Gibson.
I think you actually play him tonight, even against the Spurs.
Yeah, he's coming in. He's not in lineups right now, only because there are the guys like Davis. We're actually going to mention a couple other power forward plays coming up here, but he's not a lock for me. But I think right now for FanDuel purposes, he's the second highest power forward points per dollar player in the system. Let's get into the 10 o'clock games. Orlando going in and playing Portland. No real relevant injury news here. I guess Swanigan is going to keep starting for Portland. They play. It's really for them. It's just kind of they really just want to play Lillard and McCollum, and then the rest of the guys just end up playing matchups kind of all the way down the chain. Orlando side, they're going to still be without DJ Augustin, though they have Elfrid Payton back. A lot of these players kind of just fall in the middle for me, but I'm wondering if you see something I don't.
No, not really. I think that, you know, a lot of them are pretty fairly priced. You know, they've been fairly good recently, but they've gotten expensive as a result. I think Fournier is kind of interesting. I mean, he's been bad the last few games, but I think there's minutes upside there if it all comes together. But again, we're only talking for big tournaments here. So inevitably, someone's going to get in the chat room and want to talk about Elf. We play an Elf tonight. What's going on with Elf? The guy's minutes are just all over the place, and everyone who just got excited about that Knicks performance has been just soundly punished in the other times playing him. So I get that there's upside there. I won't even touch him for big tournaments. I think Orlando, unfortunately, you know, probably stretched just a little too thin. Although I do want to know what you think about Aaron Gordon. I mean, he's been bad in the last two games. Some of that's been minutes related. Some of it's been matchup related. He's another guy that I just don't know which game to look to figure out what the plan is with him. Not only the plan, but what the performance is going to be like. 7,300 is 600 less than we played him as a chalk play against Phoenix. Is he in consideration at 7,300?
It's so hard to figure out with him. Now, he started the season. I think his fantasy numbers at the start of the season look better than they probably were because he was shooting so hot from three. Like, he was like shooting like 60 or 70% from three. I think overall, this is where he's going to settle in. I think the 33, I think that they really want to play him 33 minutes. They've just had a lot of wonky games. They played in a lot of blowouts going either way to start the season. I think overall, this is probably where he ends up. I think he actually ends up more like an 8,000 range at least on FanDuel. I think that's probably the fair price. So I think we are probably buying a little low on him. And if we get a game where he just goes out there and plays 36 minutes and kind of puts it all together, because he's got double-double in him. Like, he's a 10 rebound kind of guy if everything's kind of shaking correctly. I'm just not sure this is completely the matchup I want to do it in. The final game is Philadelphia and the Lakers. Philadelphia, tell me if you trust this. Embiid has played 32, and then he played 27 in a blowout, and then 36 minutes in his last three games. Do you think that we can start trusting Embiid as a 33 or so minute guy going forward? Like, do you think the training wheels are completely off on the minutes restrictions for Embiid now?
It looks like they are. The question is he a $9,700 player? Like, is his production, his absurd production that he was putting out in 24 to 28 minutes a game, is that going to continue to scale? Because if so, we might have another $12,000 player on our hands. But I'm a little gun-shy about playing a guy for $10,000 who, you know, just still on average plays fewer than 30 minutes a game.
It's close for me because I think
it's a great matchup.
It is, and this is just the right kind of matchup. And the fact that they've been playing him, I want to give him like 33 minutes and feel pretty good about it.
It's just not your choice about giving him those minutes, Doug. It's ultimately going to come up to the coach. You know,
he's just so damn good. He's really good. Like, last game against the Clippers is where we start to see like what this guy can do when you give him like real, like, star level NBA minutes. 32, 16, 2 assists. And actually, he probably, by all accounts, probably just ran bad in the steals and blocks, because usually he's good for a couple of those, a combination couple of those a game. Other guys in the Sixers I find interesting. Homie Dario is playing big minutes here. He didn't do anything. He played 34 minutes, shot 1 for 8 from the field, and barely did another thing. But he's still coming really cheap. Do you think Saric is a guy we can trust? He's not going to be a high usage guy in this offense, but this is just such a great matchup. But he's only 4,500 on FanDuel.
I don't know. I mean, we've talked a lot about the best kind of punt plays, and those are the ones that are producing in their opportunity before sliding into the other role. Dario has kind of gone both ways on this. He's actually, and we see this sometimes with teams, like we've seen this with the Thunder, for instance, in the past, where sometimes minutes on the Thunder bench are just worth more than minutes in the Thunder starting lineup because there's such high usage guys around. With Simmons, now Embiid, even guys like TJ McConnell can wind up bouncing the ball up and down a ton of time. Are you worried at all that Saric's minutes, as they skew more towards playing with the starting five aren't as valuable on a points per minute basis.
They probably aren't, but at 4,500 for 35 minutes against the Lakers, I'm willing to just say that he's going to be on the court long enough to make something happen, right? Like,
yes, that's probably
I do think that last game, you know, the 1-for-8, the 34 minutes out of him in this, what he did last game is like the basement on what you're going to really expect. So I think that I'm completely fine with it. It's just so cheap. Like,
yeah.
I think if you're $4,500 for almost anybody that's going to play 33 or so minutes is kind of worth it for me. Really, the Sixers across the board are interesting. Simmons is getting kind of expensive. He's been very good, but I'm not sure we can... he's probably just too expensive to keep playing. I feel like if it's just been always like a day late, I'm playing Simmons, like just because the price has just been always, except for the day one when we played him like the first like two games of the season or something like that.
It's like buying Google stock, you know, like Google stock was always really expensive and you were taking a risk by buying it. It's always pretty much worked out too, but most of the time stuff that's too expensive, you just shouldn't buy it. You know, you're taking on too much risk. I think Simmons is definitely in that category now. Like, I certainly don't see him ending the season as a $12,000 player. If anything, I would guess he'll round out. It's more like the 85-9,000 range, and there's no reason to buy into the enthusiasm right now.
Lakers have played surprisingly pretty steady minutes this season. The guys like Kuzma are... Kuzma's been playing 34 to 36 minutes kind of every night. Lonzo Ball, the performance has been up and down, but the minutes have been there. Can we start trusting what the Lakers are doing in terms of minutes? Although, I mean, the prices have kind of come up accordingly. So Kuzma is a guy you're buying at like 6,000. Lonzo obviously is a guy, he's like over 7,000. Do you trust these guys in this matchup? Highest total on the slate, I believe. I think I said that. Oh, it's tied with the New Orleans Toronto game. So these two games, if you're looking to target games just from a Vegas perspective, these are both of the highest totals, and they're projected to be pretty close.
You're going to see some ownership on Ball tonight. There's no question about that. People have gone to that well in good matchups, and it's paid off for them. I think oftentimes young players wind up being very matchup dependent because, you know, really sophisticated, excellent defenders, I feel like they can get in the young players' heads sometimes. Like, it's just really hard to stay focused when like Kawhi Leonard's hounding you, right? It's kind of easier just to bow down from the moment. So I think that in this game, a great defensive matchup for Ball, I can see him actually going off tonight. Wouldn't mind playing him really in any format in spite of the minutes concerns. Oftentimes with the Lakers, you know, Ball's minutes have been relatively consistent, but they've still come up and down more than other players you would like at a similar price range. Like, this guy's you would consider steady cash game plays. The last four games, 28-38, 28-38. So, again, like, best of luck deciding if it's going to be a 28 or 38 night. I think if you think it's going to be a 38 night, which of Vegas totals and spreads are to be believed, it probably will be, then I think Ball's a good play.
I think you are actually buying pretty good. Now that I look through this team, I think you are buying at pretty good prices on pretty much the entire starting lineup now that I look at
the
it.
The Lakers.
Like, yes. Ingram, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, even Kuzma, they seem, if I'm going to label them fair or low, I think they're actually all coming a little low, especially a guy like Ingram, who's been a little bad from the field of late, and that's kept the price down. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com/NBA. Go check out a free 3-day trial to the projection system. Head over to the chat room. We'll be in there. One of us is there, or both of us are there almost every single night talking basketball.
I would say every night. Yeah. Every night that there's a basketball slate.
Oh, every night one of us is there. Some nights to both. Of us are there. That's all I meant. We'll be talking basketball with our users, so go check that out. DFSR.com/NBA will get you started, buddy. Be back again tomorrow talking more basketball, or maybe Friday. I don't know. We'll be podding again later in the week. All right, talk to you later.
Bye, Bitcoin.